chicken bin this morning. We're going to have to put a new roof on that. That's going to have to be a priority. For some reason, it's not doing its job. And I'm not looking forward to that.
Sounds like work to me. And all putting a roof even on something as small as a chicken coop.
Amber has some metal roofing she's going to give us that was left over from her garage years ago. And it's like brand new, little dust on it. Well, we got to go over and get it and haul it up here. It's way out in the field over there. So we have a plan as to what we're going to need to be doing.
You got to do what you got to do when you got to do it. And all. Well, now, is yours a peaked roof or is yours a slanted flat roof?
Flat roof. And I think that's a problem. I think it's kind of sank down on the far side over there out towards the field. And so it's the water's running back instead of running off.
That will happen, and then you got to figure out what to do about it so that it'll, you know, you can, which means either replacing it or trying to prop it up some and get it up where it needs to be.
Kind of impossible, though. It's that corrugated roofing made out of fiberglass, and I thought we'd never have a problem with it, but I noticed out there this morning that it's not real bad where they go, but the other part out there that's out in the open, of course, is wet. We've gotten 5,100 since midnight.
Raining off and on all morning. I looked out, looked like I already had almost a half inch in the gauge before I left the house. And now over here where I am, it's raining again and raining fairly hard. So, you know, that's one of these situations where it is putting out a lot of putting down a lot of water. So I thought about stopping to check my mail, but I think I'll wait till later when I've got the big umbrella and go out there to check the mail. I don't think I'm gonna get out of the car to do it now. I'll just wait till I pull in the yard and go right into the house because it's coming down pretty good over here right now.
Mail's come yet, but I don't like to put a bill out there with a check in it. Although it's a locking mailbox, when you go to mail something, the mail obviously has to be put into the door that she pulls down to put the mail in. But if you put that flag up, that's just an advertisement for somebody to steal it.
I still remember a rainy day like today when somebody stole 11 envelopes out of my mailbox, and all they got in them was QSL cards. There wasn't a penny in any of them. So, you know, it's been a long time since I've mailed anything with a check in it. I do most of my payments online or where I can go in and just do it myself right close if it's somewhere close. But, had to go get me a new razor this morning. Mine has quit working or it hasn't quit working. It still works, but it doesn't cut very well. And new blades for it were going to be almost as much as buying a new razor. So, and it's needed. It's a rechargeable, and it wasn't charging up real good. So I figured I'd just go invest in a new one today and go back to my Norelco triple headers like I had before. So anyway, so that was my expense out this morning. But now I got the tires rotated and rebalanced and zero charge.
Well, yeah, those electric razors are a chunk of money now from back when I used to use one, but I never did get a close enough shave with them, so I use the regular old razor and the shaving cream. I use that gel, and it lasts forever, and it takes very little of it. But I like her really, you know, smooth. And it's kind of a pain. I guess we should have some Indian blood. I don't think they have whiskers. I'm not sure about that, Rusty. Is that true or not?
KP2A, check that.
Well, there goes everybody. I've never really seen any with beards or anything, but I have seen some with longer hair. But me and me and regular razor blades do not get along. I don't care what kind of shaving cream or gel or anything else you use. My face just does not like it. And all. But with the Norelco triple header like I get, and it wasn't that expensive. They had more expensive ones, but I got the one I knew would work for me. Hello, Dave. Go ahead and pick it up.
Hey, good morning. In response to your early comment, don't your tires rotate every time you drive the vehicle?
Dave, and, you know, regular razors don't like ugly either.
He thinks they're a comedian these days, Dave. Tom, Dave doesn't need to give up his day job because he'd never make it as a comedian. Go ahead, Dave.
I'll be here all week, but I'm bummed. No. when I got my tires, I got them through Discount Tire, and I bought the Road Hazard and all that kind of stuff on it. So I do the same thing every couple of months. So good job. Good job, Rusty. Good job.
I've gotten them there. I don't get the Road Hazard, but I don't drive as much as you guys do. That's about $100. And I had a tire one time that got a nail or something in it in the side of it going through one of these new additions that were being built, and they just took care of it. It was just no problem. And another time, my kids were home several years ago from Michigan, and my son-in-law down here was a test driver for a company up in Michigan, and once they got done with their tests, they give their tires to the employees, and so they were just used during that test, and he had given them to my other son-in-law, and he put them on there, and he come down here, and I took him to Discount Tire. He had a flat, and they took us back in the shop and showed us, and they were several years old hanging in the garage, but they were dry rotted, and they actually stayed overtime that night in order to accommodate them so they could get back to Michigan. And I'll never forget that, so I'd never go anywhere else. They're great people down here. This was the one down here on Wade Hampton and Greer. This is NZ0TR. Go ahead, Rusty.
Okay, this is going to be my last one because I'm sitting here in the yard now, and I pull up another inch or two here, another foot or two, I'm going to lose the repeater. It doesn't like being in my yard with all these trees with leaves on them around me. So anyway, you guys stay dry the rest of the day. I'm going to meet feet inside and go eat my lunch and then get to work on the computer, some of the things I got to get done before the meeting tonight. I'll talk to both of you later. And yeah, I had tires like that. I was up in Michigan, and one of mine, I hit something in the yard up there and put a hole in the side of my tire. Had the car towed over to Discount Tire over there near where we were, and they replaced it, no questions asked, because, I mean, I had the coverage on it, and I have it on these, too. Talk to both of you later. KB2HXS to take it with N0TR. This is W2T. 7-3s, guys.
Okay, to Rusty, have a good day. Yeah, Tom, we ran into a very similar incident when we went down to Florida last month. We had a flat tire. We were pulling out of a hotel, and we grazed the corner of one of the parking curbs. And I put my spare on. And this happened on a Sunday, of course. Discount Tire is closed, but the next day they took care of me. And again, no questions asked. They changed the one tire, and I just bought another one for the other side because it was a little bit worn. So. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I like Discount Tire. They're a good place. And, man, here comes the rain. My goodness. And I'm going to be at a customer's house here in just a minute, so I'll let you take the mic, and then I'm going to get out of the car.
73's Rusty. Okay, Dave. You have a safe day, and stay out of that rain if you can. And we'll talk to you guys down the line. This is NZ0TR 73's.
Just kicked up. Oh my gosh. All right. I'll see you later, Tom. NZ0TR, KB2HXS, clear.
This is Bruce down here in Seneca. Good signal. How you doing?
This NZRLTR. I can't stay too long, but I started to walk away and I heard somebody call. My name's Tom.
NZRLTR, this is W4HI. Bruce down in Seneca. We talk occasionally.
Afternoon, Bruce. Nice to hear you. Anytime. And I'm glad I caught you. Oh, I was just sitting here watching Story Television, and they're loading space shuttle stuff onto the Guppy. It's a very unusual airplane. I'm sure you've seen it. And it's one of the channels I like the most. It's very interesting. It's over the air.
I subscribe to YouTube Premium, so you don't have the ads. And, boy, I tell you what, I could spend hours. Sometimes I'm really, I do it after my wife goes to bed. Sometimes I'm up, like last night, I was just up till like 3 in the morning, just watching whole a whole variety of different documentaries and all kind of stuff. It's just really fascinating what you can get on the boob tube. Well, I won't hold you go. You said you were leaving. I just want to say hello and just get a signal check from you. We're here in the residence, and I'm on 20 meters, and it's only about a S1 or 2 noise level. I mean, it's like really, really quiet. I've already made 2 contacts, so I'm going to go back to CQ and over.
They are fine business, Bruce. Well, I wasn't in any hurry. I'm a little hoarse today, but yeah, it is, and that YouTube's amazing. Well, this particular plane has T-56 engines on them, and that's what the last plane I flew in the Navy was the P-3 Orion, and it had the very same engines as this Guppy's got, and they're 4,600 horsepower turboprops. That's just a lot of power. We'd fly out and work a submarine, and we'd be out 1,000 miles or better, and then shut one engine down, feather it, and fly on 3, and stay on station at least 4 hours, and then fly back another 4 hours. Quite an engine, I'll tell you for sure.
Law enforcement job was in Jacksonville as a deputy sheriff. So obviously I got to see a lot of P-3s at both the airfields there. I was in the county just below at Clay County. And a navigator for a P-3, which was a special P-3, forget, because it was for the chairman of the Navy, or whatever that is, I'm sorry. But he was a top dog on the Navy. And that was his flight plane. So he was a navigator. He taught me Morse code, and I got my license down there in 1975.
The navigator was an officer. The pilot, co-pilot, was an officer. The flight engineer was enlisted, and the tactical coordinator was an officer. And then we had radar. Was enlisted, electronic countermeasures was enlisted, and Julie, and then Jezebel, it was enlisted. And I had flown in the S2 Grumman Trackers, which were a carrier plane for a year and a half out of San Diego, North Island, so I could basically set anywhere I was needed, and that made it nice. I liked to run the radar a lot, not that often, until you got over in Vietnam, but yeah, that P-3 is quite a plane. Then they had one called the EP-3, which was an Elint one, and that one pilot, like a dummy, landed it on a Chi-Com island at a Chi-Com air base. The news media acted like he was a hero, but I guarantee you, his career was over with. That wasn't necessary at all, but it just amazed me that someone would do that, because we had parachutes and you could also ditch, and there was ships in the area where he'd done that. But yeah, back in Jacksonville. I was there for almost 7 months, or around 7 months. And I think I went there in February, and they was flying Willie Victors then, which did the Hurricane Hunters. And I loved to hear those things take off from our barracks there. And they had a flight crew of, it was quite a number, 18 or 23 people. Petrie had 13 of us on board. But they had those big reciprocating engines with water injection, and they really had a beautiful sound to them.
It was in Orange Park, which was just over the line from Duval County. So Cecil Field was really close, so you could really see those planes taking on and off all the time. And I really admired that P-3. I really liked turboprops. The only time I've ever flown a turboprop was a commercial, but that was good. It was usually a two-engine stuff going into smaller cities that I had to and doing the work I was doing. I was in federal law enforcement eventually, and real flying, like with the turboprops. In Brunswick and, other different small cities here on the eastern seaboard.
That was an offshoot of, I'm trying to think of the name of the commercial airliner, and that was a four-engine turboprop, and I've flown in those two-engine ones. That was the roughest ride I ever had coming out of Mobile. My brother was in the Navy at the same time, and I visited him in Pascagoula, and I flew out of Mobile on over to Jacksonville to go to school. And we come out of there, and it was really highly overcast, and a storm had been in there, and oh my. But the P-3, what they did from the Lockheed Electra is they shortened the wings to 99 foot 8 inches, which, those are your shock absorbers. In our minimums were 100 feet in the daytime and 300 feet at night, and it got rather rocky down there without those longer wings.
Oh my, and then there's a neat plane, Lockheed, that's for sure. The Orion, could it have looked like if just a piston plane like the DC-6? Is that kind of similar?
The Orion?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of it because it kind of had the same tail and everything, four engines, but it was prop. And then the Orion, the P-3 was, of course, turbo prop.
Well, the Orion derived from the P-2V Neptune. My brother-in-law flew in those years ago out of Woodby Island in Washington. And they were recently 350s or 2800s up the big radial engines. The S-2 was the carrier-borne anti-submarine plane, and it looked like the COD, the carrier onboard delivery, only it was set up for anti-submarine. And the E-1B, it had a pancake on top of it on our ship. And but the Orion was a derivative of the P-2 Victor Neptune, which would have been the old Korean area, and there's a few of them left flying in Vietnam. I seen some in Vietnam that the CIA was testing when they had an infrared camera in the nose, which we weren't supposed to know about, and it was set up to draw ground fire. But that's where the P-3 Orion came from, only instead of recips, it had turboprops.
Greenville, being such a Navy guy.
In that long, I was just in for the normal tour. My brother stayed. He wanted me to stay in, but he was a personnelman working in the office, and he didn't get shot at. And I was originally from Kansas, and I worked there as an electrician and industrial electrician and electronic technician on everything from vacuum tube drives to variable frequency drives. And my kids, when I got pretty disabled. I was 62 or so, and I had worked in a machine shop, a very large machine shop, for 32 years. And then I worked in the printing plant as a technician, and then I worked in a wheel plant as a technician. It shut down. They sent it to Mexico after the automobile industry went to heck. And then I worked, my last tour was in a hospital for a year as a technician. And the kids said, "Dad, it's time to quit, and we want you down here by the grandkids where it's warmer than Kansas." And I didn't want to come, but it was the best thing I ever done, Bruce, W4HI and Zero TR.
John. Well, Tom, this is our second time living here. I was in federal law enforcement, and I got stationed in Atlanta. And what I was doing, I was helping setting up drug task forces in the early 80s all over the Southeast United States. And my specialty is electronic surveillance, which is body bugs and tracking and telephone intercepts and just all that kind of stuff. Video when it came about, and video really came about for us in the mid 80s when they started making cameras relatively small. Now, of course, they're extremely small. You got them on your phone, But it was a lot of fun. I traveled all over the Southeast United States. What brought me here the first time was, here in Oconee County, was setting up a task force between Oconee County, Pickens, and Anderson. The feds, we provided all the initial startup funds for equipment, and I focused on the equipment part and trained them and all that kind of stuff. And we'd come back periodically every couple of years, because they'd have guys would be in for a couple of years, either deputies or a police. And, they would put them in the task force for a little while, and then they'd rotate them out. That was good. It was really a lot of fun. And, of course, I got to see a lot of the city of the Southeast. Then later on, I went back more doing federal and investigations and still in surveillance. And it took me all over the country, the Caribbean, parts of Central and South America, things like that. So it was a good career. And now I just help my church broadcast their YouTube services. Over.
Well, Bruce, that sounds wonderful career, I'll tell you for sure. Well, we've been down here 15 years, and I think it's 15 now, 14 or so, and we just love it. It's growing too fast, but we live 14 miles northeast of Greenville and north of the downtown Greer quite a ways, up here between Lake Cunningham and Lake Robinson, really like it. We're away from all the new additions, so I don't know any way they could build around other than around us, but we can't see it, so I love it. And I hate to get out in the traffic because I'm 76 years old and I'm used to Kansas traffic. Used to ride motorcycles up there. Dangerous. They kill somebody every week, it seemed like, on motorcycles. But that sounds great. I love electronic countermeasures. That was a lot of fun. I ran that on the S2 and I ran it on the P3. And anything electronic like that was really intriguing, and it was highly secretive. It would have been nice to fly on one of those EP3s. They got all the goodies on board them. But now they fly the P8 Poseidon. And that's the ones that the Chi-Coms keep harassing. But they come up here and practice touch and goes quite a lot. It's a modified 737. I don't know exactly where they come from, but I'm thinking Charleston. But I see them quite often up here. They're not very noticeable because they're all gray. And it says Navy on the side of them, but you can't see it from the ground. But I've seen them land out of GSP, and that thing's loaded with a lot of electronic goodies.
So ECM, electronic countermeasures, was where you go into a office or something like that, and you look for different types of positive eavesdropping devices, you know, miniature transmitters. Later on, it became cameras and things like that. And there was a whole, you know, theory and focus to it. But since I knew the positive side, it was pretty easy to do the countermeasure side. And most of the time, you never find anything because there wasn't anything there. But we did practice that a lot and trained for it a lot. So we'd have similar to like a fox hunt. When I was in the training aspect of it down in Flipsy, there's a big federal training base down there, and I was a senior instructor for off and on for many years in electronic surveillance. And we'd set up, they'd have all these different homes and businesses, assimilators. And, I mean, we'd put stuff in, and we'd give them the equipment and let them come and try to find it all. And it was a lot of fun. And it did a little bit on the commercial side for some national U.S. banks down in Brazil that thought they were being eavesdropped. And, you know, when I walked into this one down in Rio de Janeiro the first time on a Saturday morning, I come into this, into the CEO of one of a major U.S. bank. I come into the there, and there's the custodial staff having coffee, well, really espresso, in the boardroom, you know, and I'm thinking, well, if your security is that lax, you could bring anything into this place. And they were on a tall building, which means it would be very easy to put a very, very low-powered device in there and receive it, you know, from a building that's only, you know, a couple hundred feet away, you know, over.
Yes, sir, I understand. And I thought that was very intriguing where they could bounce a laser off the glass in an unsecured room from the outside and demodulate the audio off of it, things like that. They had one in a picture in the Pentagon for a long time, or the White House. I don't know. I can't remember which building it was in out there. And the Russians had put something in there where they could, I think they could target it and then bounce the signal off of it and demodulate the audio. But it was there for years before they discovered it. It's incredible what they can do. Most of our stuff, like on the S2 Grumman tracker, it was called an ALD-2 Bravo, and we'd have to go to the secret room, and we would listen to the audio from every radar conceivable. And, I could still tell you, if a MiG-21 or 23 or something was coming at you, just by listening to the audio in it, and then it would give us a bearing to it, and then it would tell us if they locked on. And on the P3, it was much more greater information system, where you could see all the various parameters of that radar and know how to get around it, basically, without going into it. But it was a very much better system with a large screen and such as that. But you could derive many, many parameters about who was looking at you. But it was all passive. We didn't have anything active, Bruce.
Thing that you were talking about, there might have been a picture, but the most noteworthy one was a gift to President Kennedy by Khrushchev. Was a handmade great seal, or eagle, great seal, all handmade. And inside the beak was a microwave cavity. So they would, and this was in the White House for a long time. This was the noteworthy one that I know of. And they put that in one of the meeting rooms inside the White House, and then they beamed a microwave signal to that, on that particular resonant frequency of that microwave cavity. And of course, anybody talking would, the audio waves would resonate it, and it would vibrate it. And of course, they would then, with the microwave, they'd be able to make it, reverse it back, and that's how they decoded the audio. And it was very effective, and it was in there for about 8 years or something like that, till another president came in, and then they started doing ECM and realizing that the Russians were broadcasting signals into our buildings. KGB was very clever.
W4HI, yes, they were, and that's the one I was talking about. Not many people know that, Bruce. Yeah, that worked, and when they started building an embassy for us someplace, I forget where it was at, Moscow or someplace, we found that they were building that into the building, and nowadays they build those buildings to resist that kind of thing. And the other thing I worked with was acoustical warfare. And I could not say these words in the old days, but all you got to do is watch Hunt for Red October now, and you'll see some of the gear that I operated to tell you the different types of submarines and that were being detected with it. We dropped buoys in the water, and then they'd transmit up to us, and then we would decode that on grams, which were these minus 300-volt styluses that burned it onto paper, and go from there without saying much more. But now they got it on a CRT, or an LCD probably now, and they blow the signature into an EEPROM, and then when it matches, whereas we had to memorize all the different propulsion plants of every submarine in the world, and the acoustical signatures. And that was kind of as fascinating as electronic countermeasures.
I'd like to get together sometime here in the future. We probably have, since we have different backgrounds, mine was domestic law enforcement and yours was U.S. military, it was similar and different. I did train mostly CID and NSA, NCIS and OSI agents on criminal use of for criminal enforcement and different surveillance for them in Navy and Air Force bases to do training for them. And it was always interesting. Of course, they were just basically military police. Again, this was all just mostly theft of government property, which is the number one crime in government, is theft of government property. And after that, it goes downhill. But anyway, nice meeting you, Tom, again. And we'll chat for the farther. I'm going to get back on HF while I have this really spectacular low noise level. 7-3 from Seneca, W4HI.
Okay, Bruce, I'll check that out, because it's been pretty terrible with this G5 CME that's happened. Now, I got to tell you, you mentioned the CID. A lot of people don't remember that, and I was sitting in a cubicle in Jacksonville, and if you was E5 or above, well, you had a cubicle, and there was four of us in it. And make a long story short, my mom and dad had a mom and pop grocery store when Dad got laid off from the railroad one time for 4 months before he went back. He bought this little grocery store. So I had sold every kind of tobacco there ever was. And the smell of it was familiar to me, you know. I was just a kid back then in the early 60s, late 50s. And anyways, this guy come in and he had a ball cap on, but it was kind of a uniform. And he stuck his head in our cubicle, Bruce, and he says, "You guys smell that?" And I said, "Yes, sir," because I didn't know if he's an officer or not. And he says, "Okay, what do you think that is, Rouse?" And I said, "Well, smells like cherry blend tobacco. It smells pretty darn good to me." He says, "Where are you from, son?" And I said, "Kansas." He just shook his head and smiled, and he says, "That figures." And I noticed that the other four guys in the other cubicle were never seen again, Bruce.
There, Tom. Very good. 7-3, you have a blessed day, W4HI.
Yeah, they had marijuana in there at the time, and that wasn't looked upon favorably. Take care. I didn't know what NCIS was then. I don't even think they had it. It was so many years ago. It would have been in the 60s. W4HI, the pleasure's all mine, N0TR 73.